This is an interview with Governor Victor Atiyeh at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is January 19th, 1993, and this is tape 15, side one, the day before the inauguration of the new...
What is it today?
Is it today the 19th?
I don't plan to watch it.
I know the ceremonies are going on all during this week, but what was your impression of Governor Clinton? And was he a governor when you were a governor?
Yes. He was elected the first time, the same time I was elected. And then he ran for re-election and lost. So my last 4 years, he was not there. Then he ran again and won. So he was coming in as I was going out. My impression, very ambitious man. Probably was aiming at where he is today, then.
Mm-hmm.
Some Democrats try to consider him as the hope for the future. That was blunted when he lost his re-election, but nonetheless, he kept his path clear. It was evident what was in his mind, as you recall the letter that he wrote in regard to his military status, that he wanted to, I've forgotten the words, but maintain his political viability. He was thinking about it even then.
Mm-hmm.
For that reason, that's the kind of person I like.
Did you meet him at the governor's conferences that were held?
Oh, yeah. At all the governor conferences. Well, I was governor, mm-hmm. He was governor, at all of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was he active in discussions there?
Not necessarily, no.
On going back to 1973, do you recall the other candidates that were running against Jason Bowe at the time for Senate presidency?
No, I don't.
I would imagine that there...
Label was, I don't remember.
There probably wasn't much...
Lent, some of those other folks, I'm guessing. There was a division within the Democratic Party between the moderate and liberal Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And the liberals would be represented by Berkeley Lynn, Ted Halleck, and some of those folks. But they couldn't get enough to head off Jason Bowe. And incidentally, there was always almost an unspoken, again, I think we talked about it, sort of upstate, downstate kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really look at the history leadership, probably most often you'll find downstate speaker, downstate president, than you will upstate. I don't think there was any what I would call upstate president of the Senate while I was down there.
Hmm. Did the Senate Republicans support Jason Bowe?
No. Well, they didn't need us. Well, finally, when the final vote comes, you say, well, let's make it unanimous. Okay, all right, let's go.
But if there's a split between the Democrats, could the Republicans then have the effect of switching it to someone downstate?
No, but in this case, there wouldn't any need for it.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about 73 now.
Yeah.
There are just too many. You know, six aren't going to go. You can't stretch six very far. And that six means there was 24 of them.
Right. But the split wasn't even enough that the Republicans could have swung it one way or the other.
No. Mm-hmm. No, it wouldn't make any difference. They made their own choice.
Mm-hmm. Where did Burns fit into all this? John Burns had been Senate President the previous session.
Yeah.
And, of course, he had formed... pretty much the last, that was probably the last coalition with Republicans. Where did he fit in the 73? Was he outcast by his fellow Democrats?
Well, he had good committee sanctions, I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily ostracized.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really, that's part of the great pageant of life, as my son used to say.
Aside from your committee assignment on education, you were also on alcohol and drugs. Betty Roberts was chair of that in that session. What do you recall of that committee?
Not much.
There was a joint committee that approved a bill to remove criminal penalties for the use and possession of small amounts of marijuana. Do you recall the debate over that? In 1973,
yeah.
I would imagine that was probably a pretty hot issue.
I'm still trying to put things in my mind as to what happened when.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall. That was a bill that got a lot of attention for Stafford Hansen, as I recall. And he voted for it. This was the possession of 1 ounce of marijuana would be a misdemeanor rather than a felony.
Mm-hmm.
I voted no. And in that case, it wasn't necessarily that I had any real strong feelings about possession of 1 ounce of marijuana, although I didn't think it was a good idea. I thought it was wrong that the state should say that drugs were okay, which actually took that did become a fact. Oregon thinks it's okay to get drugs. So the state now blesses that. Also, and it did happen, that I knew full well, remember this nose of the camel under the tent concept, that they were going to try to expand it, which I guess would be the following session, as I recall it. So those are the reasons I didn't support it.
Mm-hmm.
It passed the House, Stafford Hansel, a conservative Republican, votes yes and speaks in behalf, but gets a lot of attention for doing it. It was a mistake. We shouldn't have done it, but we did it. I'll jump because on the next session, and Steve Kafuri, I remember this very specifically. This bill comes down, and I'm reading it. As I told you, remember I told you that I used to do the unspeakable thing of reading bills? And it was almost a ho-hummer. You know, I'm sitting there listening to it. Really expanded the legal use of drugs. And I remember very, it passed the House, it was over in the Senate, and just kind of going along. And I got up and I said to my colleagues in the Senate, hey, you know, you may, if you want to do this, but I don't think you know what this bill is doing. And then I wanted to explain to them what it was doing, not what Kafuri said it was doing, what it was really doing. I'd read it, look at it, see, it's right there. And the bill failed on the floor of the Senate.
Hmm.
So it was just this matter of expanding the 1 ounce thing that we talked about earlier.
There was a bill that passed in the 75 session, jumping ahead as well, which lowered the penalties for transporting marijuana to a maximum $100 fine.
That's just a continuation of the same idea.
Yeah.
But this, you don't have because it didn't pass. That's the story I just told.
Right. You were vice chair on the Environment and Land Use Committee. This was the famous bill, Senate Bill 100, that came up during this session. Ted Halleck was the chair of that committee. And I believe Hector McPherson was the principal person behind its creation. What was the evolution of Senate Bill 100?
Well, we did talk about it before, in which Senate Bill 10 was the first go-around at it. It says, if you don't do it, we'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
That was a session before. And then comes along Senate Bill 100, which is always described to be 10 times better. I'm not sure where the bill came from. But yes, Hector was the prime mover on it. And the Environment Committee also had John Burns, Mike Thorne, myself. Have you got it that way?
Yes. Mike Thorne, Jack Ripper, and Wingard.
And John Burns?
And John Burns.
Yeah. Basically, Mike Thorne and Mike Thorne, John Burns, and I, but John Pinson, we were spring boats on that drill.
Mm-hmm.
We knew them. I do recall, you know, if one were to read the original Senate Bill 100, there were a lot of things in there that were just, they weren't good in my terms of what is democracy all about. I do recall people just, oh, is that right? We could give our authority for land use planning to a regional land use body,
mm-hmm.
meaning outside the state of Oregon.
Oh.
Yes.
Really?
Really. that was, of course, in the bill. And we kept modeling the bill and molding it and moving it around. Not that we didn't think, well, maybe Mike may not have thought it, we needed it at all.
Was there any kind of structure for the regional land use board?
Well, they continue to move regionally. You know, this whole period of time was that regional government was more efficient and, you know, all the rest. And,
mm-hmm.
There was CRAG and Metro government. That's right. One of those tragedies that has occurred in our society. You know, if it could be Region 10 of the federal government, you know, who knows? Well, you know, certainly I didn't want anybody else doing it beside us. It was very, very controversial every step of the way. I can't recall the details and amendments that were proposed, and amendments meaning delete something or add something. But I was a swing vote, Mike Thorne was, John Burns was. And so we could manage to make some sanity out of this whole thing. This had a kind of a uniqueness to it. As the bill came down, it was very controversial on the floor of the Senate. We, the committee, had asked that a statement be printed in the journal, which it is,
mm-hmm.
that, and I'm going to paraphrase because I don't recall the language altogether, but that that it is not the intent of the states to local land use plan. That should be left to the local jurisdiction, cities and counties. So the idea was that we had goals, and that they could do their own individual planning, whatever that might be, but it had to match the goals.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it would pass or not pass. And so we wanted to make sure the state was not going to reach down and say, Portland on 82nd Avenue, you've got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. So there's a statement printed in the journal. It's there now. It's part of history. After 73, there was this, I guess a commission, I don't recall exactly, but anyway, they traveled the state to adopt the goals. And there were I think I'm correct, 14 statewide goals, and then there were some specific goals for the coast, an additional four or five. So the coast would have 18 or 19 goals, the rest of the state would have 14 goals. And then the operation, and we began the process of acknowledging plans in 1975, and it was not completed until 10 years later, and I kept pushing. Now I'm governor, and I'm appointing the commission, and I'm appointing the director of land use planning. I kept pushing them, complete this job, which they did. So it was a long and very contentious, and you know also how many times it was on the ballot for repeal and all the rest.
What changes did you offer?
I can't recall all of them. You know, I remember that one. So horrified by it. but I can't remember the rest, but I know there's numerous amendments. And that it finally ended up, at least to a reasonable degree, as far as I was concerned. I incidentally thought there should be land use planning. There was never any doubt in my mind about that. And I suppose a lot had to do with my living in Raleigh Hills. I said, nobody should do what's happening in Raleigh Hills. I remember Berth Beeman Highways being a two-lane, mostly residential. I know it today as a four-lane, but it's all commercial. So that's sort of my influence. I don't think Mike Thorne ever thought there should be one coming from Eastern Oregon. You know, they always had that contention. That's okay for you guys. But we don't need it out here. Whether out here was Pendleton or... Well, you can really imagine, why do you need a huge land use planning for Joseph, Oregon, or Fossil, Oregon?
But wasn't part of the controversy, and I think we mentioned this before, about in Central Oregon, the land speculation deals that were going through, and people were just buying up big chunks of desert and dividing them into lots and selling them off to people who didn't know that's
a real estate. We had bills on that. We had, you know, there were civil suits and all kinds of things that dealt with real estate. And if somebody was going to really shaft you, I mean, that was actually ran that through the Attorney General's office. And we had provisions for that kind of thing. No, it was the Santa Clara Valley kind of syndrome. There needs to be orderly development. And yet I kept saying, you know, show me the rape and pillage. The only places I could see a rape and pillage that I know about was 82nd Avenue in Raleigh Hills. You know, after the huge state of Oregon, and, you know, rather unfettered for all these years, it really wasn't all that bad. We just made it a little bit better. It is a protection, I think, and I actually use it as a governor as a selling tool. Not a negative, but a selling tool. You can pick your spot of land and you go look at the plans and you know what's going to happen around you. Can't do that, you know, almost anywhere else you go.
I understand that has become a very successful approach.
Oh yeah, it's very useful.
The businesses now support it.
There was so much still contention. You know, there, I can recall, and I consider it very legitimate. You know, they had, for example, and I had working for me as a governor, Bob Montgomery, who was a county commissioner in Deschutes County. And the neat guy, and he, as a commissioner, he was talking about this land use thing, and they were talking about what is agriculture land. And it is not agriculture land. You know, it's scrub and it's rocks, and but this is supposed to be ag land, and it isn't ag land.
But you come from Washington County, and you were representing Washington County. Washington County seems to be one of those places, maybe more so now than back then, but probably even back then, where it did have superlative farm land, and yet there were sprawling developments that were happening through there. Within your own constituency, was there a major division between, say, agricultural interests and developers?
Yeah, that's a tragedy, really, in a sense, because I think of myself, where I live, and it's an area called Broadmoor. There are restrictions on that development. It's developed by one builder. Senate Bill 100, land use planning, had absolutely no effect on me at all. I didn't make any kind of a contribution. Now let's shift gears and let's go out to Eastern or Washington County, or anywhere you want to go in Washington County. There's a lot of farmers whose children really didn't want to continue in that hard-working business. So the farmer, because that's the way things were developing, was saying to himself, okay, I'm just going to continue as long as I feel I want to continue. And this is really my savings account. This is my retirement fund. And so when I decide to quit, I'll subdivide it, sell it, I'll get a lot of money, and I can retire. Senate Bill 100 says to him, no, you can't do that. So they made a huge contribution to land use planning. I didn't make any. most anybody in Portland didn't make any. So yeah, and I could understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I could also understand why we should protect ag land. It's one of those times, it's very hard when you've got a political philosophy, you know. I do believe in freedom. But this, in spite of everything I've told you, is still an important way of land use planning. And I thought to myself, the day may come when ag land is going to be much more expensive than subdivision region, subdivision land. There's not going to be that much of it. I'm sure land values have gone up. They went down during the recession. They're back up again. But and maybe that day will come. But we did take away the retirement fund of an awful lot of people. Sometimes unnecessarily. Back to Deschutes County, ag land, it was just scrubbing rocks. That's dumb. Pure and simply dumb. So now they talk about it. It was a great discussion last session, what they call secondary. It's a term that's used now.
Right, secondary lands.
Yeah, well, that's that stuff that was put in ag that really isn't ag. Well, I've got to go up to Portland State.
I presume that the Senate Bill 100 completely occupied that committee during the session. There were some other supplemental.
It was pretty consuming, yes.
There were other supplemental bills, though, weren't there, that added to Senate Bill 100 that regarding some of the other issues around land use.
Yeah, there were always bills. One of the other dumb things. I own a farm, and I have my home on the farm, and I have my son who wants to continue, but he can't build a home on
right.
the farm. Those kinds of discussions,
yeah.
which were legitimate. Those are real legitimate mm-hmm. complaints. It didn't make any sense at all. Why a member of the family? We had to pass special legislation later on to allow that to happen, and that doesn't make any sense at all to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole lot of contentious issues, a whole lot of them.
Hmm.
The fact is that when you wash it all down, we did the right thing.
Yeah. You were on per diem, the per diem committee, with Roberts and Groner.
That was one of those perfunctory things.
Mm-hmm. And revenue.
Revenue, yes.
Cook was chair of that. And Bo and Wingard, yourself, Brown, Burns, Groner, and Hoyt. What was that committee dealing with?
This is where I really wish I had a better recollective memory. Whether it was that session or the following session, Bo actually removed Cook from the committee because he wasn't letting the bill go through.
This regards tax matters, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Revenue. Well, I noticed that you sponsored a bill, Senate Bill 479, regarding taxation, amending the definition of inventory for the purposes of inventory tax exemption. I know that we talked a little bit about this in concept regarding, say, the inventory that you have here for your carpets. What else did this was this
well,
meant to address?
Some of it's technical. I don't know what that bill is. And eventually Jason Bowe was the one that really got it cranked up, and because everyone presumed I had a self-interest. I it worked out to be a self-interest, but actually had a knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always about. For example. This may sound really strange, but show you how technical this gets. You know, is livestock personal property, or is it real property? Is a piece of machinery in a building, is it real property or personal property?
Mm-hmm.
This means now we're getting into personal property, which is inventory. If it's bolted down, maybe it becomes real property, but you can unbold it and take it away. So, you know, whether it's movable or immovable. There's all kinds of technical stuff that relates to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
That may be an it. Jason Bowe really finally got a bill in to phase it out over a 10-year period of time. That's how it finally happened. And so it was 90%, 80%, 70%. I don't recall. It's been some time now. It's been off the rolls altogether. But it was an unfair tax. It just was an uneven, unfair tax. That's all.
Some of the other bills that you sponsored in that session, one was Senate Bill 150 to repeal an ordinance, a statute for procedures of the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board that was tabled. Do you recall the issues around that?
Say that once more.
It was Senate Bill 150, and it was to repeal ORS 342.960 regarding the procedures of the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board.
I don't recall. I can remember the issue. It finally came to a giant head in the sense that, and I lost on that one.
What was the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board?
Huh?
What was the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board?
Appeal if you were dismissed, a place you'd go to.
From your work?
Well, or that really basically was education.
Education.
Yeah.
There was a couple interesting bills that you sponsored, and I don't know what they were referring to, but Senate Bill 348 was relating to boiler and pressure vessel inspection. Why would you end up having something like that at all?
Oh, oftentimes AOI would come and their members would have some problems with the boiler inspection. I chuckle because somehow in my mind it's come up before, but I don't recall specifically.
Right.
But it very much like, I laugh about it, Denny Jones, who's still now a member of the legislature, he doesn't think it's funny at all, but we every once in a while, well, almost every session, we have a leaky load bill. A leaky load would mean that, you know, you harvest peas and you take them to the processing plant, then you had all this stuff where you feed, but it was leaky.
Yes.
So if you're driving behind that truck and that leaky load, and you get all over your car.
He talked about that.
I thought it was pretty funny because it comes up every session.
Right.
And every session it came up. And but Denny Jones, I think, was very funny. He didn't see much humor in it. I did.
Well, of course, I imagine it probably affected him a lot, being a rancher in Southeast Oregon.
Yeah, and, when he was watching out, I don't think he carried any leaky loads, but he had friends that did, so.
Yeah.
By God, we're out here, leave us alone. We don't need you folks.
You had a couple others which seemed rather generic. One was regarding motor vehicles, another one state finance, and another one regarding motor vehicles operator's license.
You don't know which committee that was in, do
you? No, I've got the Senate bill numbers on them.
No, I can't recall specifically. I think I told you earlier I was just really very strong on drunken drivers, driving with suspended licenses, that whole field of, that was a personal.
You were on the Transportation Committee that session. Maybe it was in that committee. It was in this term with Howard was chair.
Yeah, he was constant chair. I was on the Transportation Committee one time. And George, I do remember. Benita Howard, who was not the same Howard as this one. And she was with the Department of Transportation. I was a new member of Transportation. She came to see me about, you know, bills and how I felt about certain things. We got into drinking and driving. And she was a little cautious because she wasn't quite sure who I was and where I was coming from. And I said to her, Benita, I'll tell you something. I happen to know who she was. I am willing to go for capital punishment on this. So we'll compromise anything below that. I said, all I'm trying to do is give you a full, strong feeling of how I feel about a drunken driver. And well, first of all, she was kind of scared. Then she understood how I was trying to get the point.
Just in reference again to your Environment and Land Use Committee, what was Ted Halleck like as a chair?
Well, I described Ted earlier to you.
He was just like a skyrocket. He just go, he goes shooting off. And all you had to do was sort of stand back and let it come back to the ground. Yeah.